In 1877, the earth moved with the power of a footballing giant, and the world was introduced to the beautiful game.
People might yet win it here for Wolves. Blasting the shot. What a goal! Fully the hero again.
And a podcast is following the giant in its bid for glory at the top of what it created all those years ago. This is the 77 Club.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to episode 261 of the 77 Club. Harry, start with the socials.
That is the Wolf 77 Club on all social media, apart from on X. We're at 77 Club Podcast. We're also on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify and YouTube.
The regular Jack Williams is here.
I'm not ready to start calling it X yet, so it's still Twitter, but hello.
Formerly Twitter. And a newcomer to the podcast, I'd like to welcome Daniel Bayliss. Dan, I don't know if you've been on before. When was the last time you were on? Who was Prime Minister? Yeah, okay.
Well, that could be anyone's guess.
That could have been not very long ago. Excellent, good to have you back. Harry, let's start with Villa. We want to set the scene, if you can, please. Your day started pretty early, 5:30 kickoff at Villa Park, but you were in the pub early doors.
Went too bad, actually. I got a train off about midday with Jack's crew. Those that don't know, can we get in trouble for this? I had Jack's ticket, who cares? Sack me, I ain't bothered. went up with old Bully, Fez and that, Dale. And yeah, I got a train up, had a few beers. There's a few pyros and that going off in a few of the pubs we went in, but we just left. I think, did you see that? All the orange, what's it called? The orange gas?
Flare, pyro.
And then, as we know, got into the ground and it all went downhill from there. Do you know what? It was great on the train on the way in into Witten Station. Really good banter between the Villa and the Wolves fans. No trouble, but a lot of songs going back and forth. That's probably the highlight of the day, to be honest. That was when I thought we were going to win. But then obviously back to reality when the game kicks off.
I know we're sort of... I'm starting at the end. Have I gone again? Am I gone?
No, Harry went. Did.
Harry's gone. Right, okay, sorry.
Just like mic drop a suit. The second he finished talking, he just cut out.
I don't want to start at the end, but there was a great chant. I think it was on the platform to go home. And the song was obviously from the Villa fans of Mind the Gap.
Mind the Gap.
And then the Wolves fans singing back, Mind the Cash, Aston Villa, There's a Points Deduction on the Way, which I thought was an incredible song. So I want to start on a positive. But Jack, I'll come to you now. Really, really strange starting 11 from Wolves, I think, just because nobody called it, nobody expected it. A little bit of a mishmash. No one really knew what was going on, I don't think, in the build-up to this. But start for Chiwome.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, there had to be somebody who played, who, you know, particularly in that upfront role, who was going to be a young and unproven player. But yeah, he obviously... It's one of them, really, isn't it? He obviously was fancied over Fraser playing that leading role. And, you know, overall, I think didn't do too badly. I think we can come on to the way the game, like the game started. I thought we started well. Like, I was really pleased with the way we started. And to be honest, like, I didn't really see it coming. And it's one of those where they were digging in. We were had the better of the ball. And I think really what happens, particularly going away against Villa when we've got barely any players and with the bare bones, is we're going to have to perform and we're going to have to take our chances. And we didn't like create many chances, but we had a golden one, which obviously fell to Ait Nouri before Villa went ahead. And we've got to be converting that, hadn't we? And if we had, it could have been a very different game. But I think from that point on, Villa just slowly started to turn the screw a little bit. And once they went in front, it was always going to be a difficult battle to get back into the game, particularly when you're looking at like both teams' benches and who they can bring on. And their subs did come on and make an impact for when they eventually went and got the second goal. So, it, you know, we put up a decent fight with what was available. It's really annoying that we couldn't go in front, but you know, I think it's kind of went as expected, but when you asked me last week, I said we were going to lose 4-0 and it was nowhere near that bad. I think, Harry, you said 2-0, didn't you, in the end? But it's just a case, again, I think, of like they're doing their best given what we've got available. But when you think in that game, there was, you know, three 19, 20-year-olds had to feature and play a part in that game. And that's not going to win you much in the Premier League, is it really? But, you know, you've got to give them credit because they did okay considering. But it's just annoying, really, that we couldn't go to Villa with a full strength team, because I think it would have been a, you know, a different game. But at the same time, Villa fans have been saying that they've had injuries as well, but I think they've got the strength and depth to cover with it a bit more, whereas basically our entire front line, which has been so successful this season, has just been ripped out of us, and we're going to struggle, aren't we?
Danny, it was a strange one, edging possession, more shots, although fewer on target. But yeah, I think we all said the same thing. You know, as soon as it gets to around that 60-minute mark, you're thinking they're probably going to start to get a bit leggy. And as Jack and Harry have said, you know, we just haven't got the strength and depth to be able to do like-for-like swaps that are going to be fresh legs with the same quality.
Yeah, we're just a bit thin and a bit toothless, to be honest. They've played us at a good time and a bad time for us. We've had these bad injuries, but that's our fault for having a small squad. But when you look at Villa, I think they're 6th or 7th in the highest wage bill in the league. They've got the bodies in, but that's why they're in the position they're in, right? That's why they're 4th. So fair play to them if they avoid the points deduction for that one. It's, you know, we were lording it a couple of years ago when we spent big and finished higher up the table than them, and just wasn't Wolves' day. You know, Ait Nouri should really have had 2 goals from 2 foot in 2 games, and he's come away with 1. So it's disappointing, but sort of expected given what's happened over the last few months. So I'm not overly down about it. It's just frustrating from our perspective. And then it's obviously frustrating from O'Neill's perspective.
Harry, we were obviously going to talk about how small the squad is, and obviously the post-match comments from Gary O'Neill after the Burnley game, which we will move on to. But I just want to raise it with you a little bit now. You've put as a title, Jeff Shee ignored O'Neill's warning about the small squad at Wolves. Stuarton Wolf says, no sympathy for Gary O'Neill. He was quick enough to back the club's approach when he joined back in August. Now he's raising exactly the same concerns as Locke Bategi made, and he was critical of. Just your thoughts on that.
Yeah, and I think someone put on social media earlier as well, like a quote from every manager, like the last 4 managers saying the same thing, isn't it? Saying they've been promised bodies, but they haven't got it. Lopetegui was probably the most outspoken about it, and obviously clearly had a big falling out with Jeff Shee. But I think the difference is with this season is we kind of knew what the objective was, which was to stay up. Jeff was very honest in his open letter saying we've got to be a team that should have the underdog mentality that we've just been promoted, which Wolves fans don't want to hear. But I think they kind of got a bit of credit in the bank when Everton and Forest got their charges. But it's got to change because they've got to look. They've been brilliant. They've been absolutely brilliant for us, folks, and they've took us to, you know, to where we are. But there is another level we've got to try and get to now. Else it'll be boring, and eventually we will go down if we keep doing what we're doing. I know Jeff's got this obsession with having a small squad and bringing youth players through, but right now, it's proven that it don't work because Chiroma, Chirawi, Fraser, when they come in, it's just night and day. Like the quality difference at that age is just not there, is it? Fabio Silva's another one, really, as well. Yeah, the Villa game, just quickly before we move on from it as well, I actually thought you know, like the first half hour, we were pretty good. And the thing is, under Gary O'Neill, obviously our hands are tied. The effort we put in, they all put effort in. And even against Coventry, I know we lost. Obviously, we'll get on to the Burnley game, but they always put in 100%. And under Bruno Lage, towards the end of that season where we like petered away and we had a small squad, the players just didn't give a shit, did they, if you remember? But that's the big difference. And yeah, it's a bit of a surprise now that Gary O'Neill has decided to come out now and say what he's saying, but he's got a lot of credit in the bank. All the blame does go to Jeff and that, but it's a weird one, as I say, because, you know, this is like a weird season where we was expecting it, and things have got to change. And hopefully, because obviously Cunha is back now. That was a big surprise, actually. Everyone thought Cunha would be on the bench for Villa, and he wasn't. And that was a bit of a dampener going into it as well, him not being available at all. And yeah, and we lose and we are where we are. But it's a weird one, isn't it? It's a bit of a debate, and it's splitting the fan base about this topic.
Harry, I've got a bit of a point on that, because we're clearly going through cycles, right? The end of the Nuno era where we weren't great. And then we've gone through that sort of year and a half spell where we haven't bought well when we've had the opportunity to buy, and we have spent money. And that was because of sellers and poor managerial choices, and that put us in a pickle financially. This next coming 6 months is the point where O'Neill can prove, he's proved himself on the pitch now. There's no doubters. We've got a change in management behind the scenes in Hobbs, who's clearly brought in good players at low cost when he has. And now we're getting to the point where we might be able to spend some money again. So although we've got that doom and gloom of having a small squad, it's because we haven't bought that well and we've sold reasonably badly. You know, yes, Moutinho came to the end of his run. Neves went for big money. And then there's been a string of really poor purchases. I mean, we could keep going forever on the Guedes. I mean, we could go around all day talking about the bad players at big money that we've bought. So this is now the opportunity with a clean slate, with a reset FFP, for O'Neill to actually stamp his thing. So this summer, this is the time for Fosun to put a push up. If they do want the club to progress, we've clearly got a good manager. It clearly looks good behind the scenes. The players want to play for the manager and the club. So it's only going to take a handful of very good signings. Wolves go to the next level. And we're doing that from a position of eighth with a game in hand on West Ham this coming weekend. So yes, there are some naysayers and the comments are blowing up and Twitter's been a shitstorm the last 48 hours. But I think you've got to look on it positively. This was, as everyone's just said, a survival season. And look how well we've done. Sorry, I know I've gone on a proper rant there.
No. But Martin says it's the board and especially Jeff. Neil says the only way to progress is to be bought by a country. James says we are where we are, 3 points off Europe. Stephen says perhaps O'Neill knows what is coming in the summer, namely no further investment. Stu says, what's with all the doom and gloom? We're one of the favourites to go down to achieve what we've done so far this season. We've overachieved. The summer won't be defined by how much we spend, but how we spend it, which sort of goes back to that.
Spot on.
Newport Wolves says, if Gary O'Neill gets what he wants, who goes and comes in next season? James again says the poor purchases were all under Lage, in fairness. I take the point, and go back to Dan's point. You know, I think we've spent badly. I think you can take any Premier League club and pick out some duck eggs and expensive ones at that. And it doesn't matter what club they're at. It's just that we obviously give them a little bit more scrutiny compared to other people. I mean, you know, we're living in a world at the moment where Roy Keane calls Erling Haaland a League Two standard striker, which is just utterly ridiculous, which is common to the weekend. Yeah, because of his movements off the ball. But Jack, what are your thoughts? Because if you've got one pundit who, by the way, you know, played for Manchester United, captain Manchester United, won a lot of silverware in Manchester United, he's having a go at Man City player, you probably think, well, actually, it probably comes with the territory. But, you know, we are in a world where everything is looked at in such minutiae that, you know, you're going to have these conversations.
Yeah, firstly, I think if Wolves were bought by a country, it'll be San Marino, no, in our look. I think it's got something to do with what we spoke about on the podcast last time. And it's just when you think about the amount of forward players we've got who we're still paying in some form part of their wages for. When Dan mentioned Guedes earlier, and you've got Podence, you've got Fabio, you've got Kalajdzic. I think the board were, you know, reluctant to bring in more forward players, particularly when everything was going well, and essentially just to be there as backup because of the amount of money they've probably still got as outgoings. on those players while keeping an eye on financial fair play. I do sympathise with O'Neill, though, because it sounded like that he was told there was going to be someone brought in, and we said it all along. You can't let, even if it's Kalajdzic and for Fabio, I still can't say his name properly.
Kalajdzic. Just say Sasha. Like,
yeah, I'll just say Sasha. It's easier. But you can't lose lose two first-team strikers and just not replace them and think everything's going to be okay. I don't care if they're not actually starting. They're still in and around the team. So I fully appreciate his frustration there, because like we're seeing it in black and white now just with the team selections. And it's a case of, oh, which 19-year-old are we going to play up front now against a really good Premier League team when they've got 7 senior appearances between them? It's like you're just asking for trouble, aren't you? So I think like I sympathise with Gary O'Neill, but I also sympathise with you know, with the players and everything going on there, because I thought we were going to lose to Villa on Saturday. Ultimately, we did. But the fact we just put up a bit of fight under those circumstances means it wasn't too heartbreaking as like other defeats would have been under different circumstances. So I think Gary O'Neill's earned our respect. And when he came in, he didn't have that at all. On this podcast, let's be honest, we slagged him off quite a lot. Even at the start, we were calling him Mr. O'Neill for the first like 2 months of the season.
Someone was, I can't remember
which
that.
Looking back now was just a bit silly and a bit childish, but you know. And I think he's earned the right now, given what he's got out of the players, and he's still getting performances out of the players in difficult circumstances, that the fact he's come out and said this, we need to listen to him. And we can't let it be a mistake that just continues to happen under successive seasons and successive managers. It has to be something that's addressed. So in line with what Dan said, clear out the deadwood in the summer, cut your losses, just get them off the wage bill, whatever it might be, whatever it takes, and have an actual crack at it. But you need to make sure you've got at least one backup for every position that you want to play in, you know, and other players who can cover in other positions. And we need to make sure that that's it. We need a squad of like 20 players who can come in comfortably and, you know, be in the first team and stay fit, you know, to be honest.
Harry, I think the one thing, I know we're sort of skipping over Burnley a little bit with the conversation here, but just to keep the flow, the one thing that Gary O'Neill said, which I thought was quite telling, was when he said that they had a Premier League striker ready to come in, but we couldn't afford that little bit of money. And I don't know what a little bit of money is when it comes to Premier League, you guess, proven strikers, but then are they really that great if they're a little bit money? Is it a loan fee that is most likely that we couldn't afford, or Jeff Shee was out of the country, or some bollocks like is I can't turn on his phone or something, or I don't know, send a fax. It depends how far you want to go back. Did you think that was quite telling, that, you know, that there really is no money?
Yeah, I think that the player was Broho, wasn't it? That Broja, the one who went to Fulham. Because it was going to be like a loan and you had to pay a bit of a fee. He was on about him. Yeah, it is telling. But I agree with what Jack said. I think Jeff just gambled. We were in a great position. He just was hoping we wouldn't get all these injuries. And as Gary O'Neill said, because he sees them day in, day out in training, he knew the overload. And you have to use the same players all the time at the intensity we play at on the counter and the high press we were doing. We're always going to get injuries, and it's happened. We called it, didn't we? I think not just us, the Wolves fans called it. You could see it a mile off, but Jeff's quite, he's got his ways. He's just got to try and change his ways, hasn't he? And he's got to be in the country if we do want to find players.
Harry, it's just a bit sad that accountants now run football, and it's not like everyone's being given an amount of money to go and spend, and it's like a draft. It's that the big clubs get to spend more money and the smaller clubs get to spend less money. And that's what the accountants say. And if you don't play by their rules, we'll take your points off you.
It was a quiet January window, wasn't it? I mean, they say it's the door slammed shut, but it sort of just did a little fire escape.
Yeah, but look at the start of the season, right? If we'd have been in the position that everyone thought, right down the bottom, scrapping for our lives, and we'd have tried to spend 10, 20 million on a player and then been floating around 16th and then had a 6-point deduction, we'd have been knackered.
But so, what frustrates me, Bayliss, what frustrates me is if we'd have got to this January and we were 18th struggling, they'd have spent some money like they did under Lopetegui in January.
Well, they did it last year.
Gamble. It frustrates me because why not? If that is the case, which I believe is, why not spend a little bit, just getting a little bit of backup, because we are literally in touching distance of Europe. It was the same under Bruno Lage, and they wouldn't do it, and they won't do it again. Because the reality is, Jeff Shee said in one of his recent Ash Wall things, is we can't compete with the top six financially. So he don't want to take the gamble. He don't want to take the risk, which is up to him. It's his money. Well, it's not his. It's the higher-ups who he works for's money. and they just want to keep us sustainable. And I think they'd be happy with us being in mid-table Premier League club, which is good. I mean, we'd have dreamed of it 10 years ago, but it does get to a point you want a bit more ambition, don't you? Just naturally, as a football fan, if you stay... I mean, I remember Albion and under Pulis, they finished eighth, didn't they? And they weren't happy. All clubs do it. Stoke. You want to try and progress, and then eventually you just go down. You just don't. You ain't going to maintain mid-table for 5 more years, I don't think. It always happens. The club Charlton back in the day. There's so many clubs you can give an example of.
Yeah.
Eventually it shoots Blackburn. You in the foot. Yeah.
The trajectory is usually down rather than up, isn't it? And you see these teams who do that, like you say, they're comfortably mid-table, comfortably established, and it only takes one season. I mean, with the exception of the Big Six and Everton have been flirting with it for years now. It will happen eventually. I'm pretty sure of that. It's going to happen at some point. I think it probably would be happening now if the three that came up weren't just so off the pace that it's kind of
even helped, Villa, Southampton, Newcastle. West Ham.
I mean, they've all gone down in recent years, haven't they? Yeah. So they've all gone down in recent years, and it doesn't mean to say you can't go down and have a season or a few seasons in the Championship and come up and compete. But to actually stay there continuously, you do need that massive amount of money. And I think that's the reason, really, that the only teams that have never gone down from the Premier League are those bigger clubs. Massive. I think
it does come down to recruitment as well. And actually, if you look at over the last sort of five, six seasons, you know, teams like Brighton, Villa now as well, who've come on that trajectory where they've come up and then they've just kept going and going and going. I mean, Brighton are a very good example at the moment because they've just published their accounts and they're the most profitable club, I think. Well, one of the most profitable in the world and certainly the most profitable in England at the moment. But if you take out the what I would call inflated transfer fees that they receive to people like Caicedo, McAllister, and not that they're poor players, but I think there's a lot of money for obviously what they paid for them in the first place, they're still in profit. So it's not the case of, you know, they've sold someone for 100 million quid and that's what's pushed them into the positive finances. If you take away the big player sales, they're still doing it because they've been run properly since 2007, obviously a long-term plan in place. But you have to be lucky, don't you? Because, you know, at the end of the day, they snuck in
Neil,
to Newcastle.
Neil's just put Leicester Premier League winners now in the Championship. I'd take that all day. If Wolves won the Premier League, then won the FA Cup a year or so later, relegate me. Yes, I would. The Premier League, Sam. If someone said Wolves are going to win the Premier League next year, but then get relegated 2 years later, I'm like, all right, we'll bounce back up eventually.
And then
they won the FA Cup. But just on Villa as well, obviously I know we've gone over that game already. I envy Villa a bit. That's where Wolves want to be. We want to do what Villa have done, don't we? We want to, they've spent well, they've got a good manager in. All we're missing is spending well, really. And look at Burnley. I know we're going to speak about Burnley in a minute, the game. They were mid-table for Adrian Dyche and they petered away and went down. They're trying to change the system. But it's just fine balance in it. And I don't know if Jeff can get it right. Because if we keep going the way we're going, we're going to get caught out. I know we're repeating ourselves a bit now, but do you want to talk about Burnley? I don't know.
Well, yeah, we can talk about Burnley. I mean, I'll start with you then, Bayliss, as you put your hand up. There was a little bit of confusion as to what formation we were playing. I mean, some outlets had Doherty on the right. Jack, I think you said, is he playing at centre-back? What's going on? Ait Nouri was playing on the left-hand side, Chiwemi up front, Sarabia behind him. It was all a little bit all over the place, but I think it comes down to the point that we've just been talking about for the last 15 minutes, is that we have got the players to play the formation that he clearly wants to play away to a struggling side who are grappling for every single point.
Yeah, I thought Burnley did well. I thought they created the better chances. Sarr kept in the game. We didn't take our chances. Especially first half, I thought we were quite poor. We haven't got a solid defence at the moment, have we? And that's what led to the goal, because they got cross wires and two of them marked the same bloke. And did well to get out of there with a point in the end, even though Lamina should have really won it for us and Ait Nouri should have probably got the other one. But Sarr made better saves than the chances we hadn't missed.
Jack, bring you in there?
Yeah, I mean... About it was just the formation. It was our choice to sort of line up like that at the back, wasn't it? Which Santi Bueno being dropped was a bit surprised by, to be honest. I don't think that's necessarily justified, but obviously with the changing formation, they picked up a little bit lately, haven't they, Burnley? So you know, it's not just a case of them being doomed relegation fodder that we should just be turning over. And as we know, Wolves never seem to do that anyway, no matter who it is. we do give points to the so-called lesser teams, and they're fighting for their lives now. They really needed wins, and I think particularly with that show towards the end of the game, because they were coming at it more than us, it looked like we were happy to settle for the point, which is frustrating to Wolves fans. But again, it's like, it's what we can do with the tools we've got. But I think up until when we scored at the very, very end of the first half, we looked poor. We looked like, going forwards, like that it was slow. The decision-making was bad. It felt like times like they didn't want to pass to certain members of the team. And I'm just naming a few names here, but I think Sarabia and Bueno, there was a couple of times where they either just played the right pass and played it terribly, or just played the wrong pass entirely and it broke the move down. It happened on a few occasions, and it was a painful watch that first half. And I think Burnley, to their credit, they deserved to be 1-0 up. And then we just sort of, you know, relied on our man at the moment, Ait Nouri, to get us out of jail. And he could have got us out of the jail with a win, really, because he had that great chance in the second half. But yeah, it picked up a little bit. But yeah, it was a concerning watch the first half. But, you know, I think by the end of it, most Wolves fans were kind of content with a point, even though we had chances to win it. But Burnley will be going home looking at that, saying that's a game that they should have won on the balance of play. And they've got a case for it, to be fair.
Harry, I think you made the point with Chiwemi, and I was watching the game and thinking that he was playing well, and, you know, was holding at the ball. He was chasing lost causes, which you don't really get a lot of the time. I don't think he really put a foot wrong, but there seemed to be this thing where, you know, a Wolves player would look up, see it was him, and then turn around and pass it backwards.
Yeah, they were all avoiding him, especially Sarabia. Sarabia didn't want to pass to him at all. Ait Nouri was the same. Hugo Bueno had a really bad game. Really bad. He was so bad down the left for me. I was glad when he went off. We are literally at the moment, with that team that started, a one-man team, and it's Ait Nouri. We just literally relied on him. Semedo made a few really good runs as well down the right-hand side. And obviously, he wasn't fault. I blame Semedo for their first goal. But Chiromi, it's one of them. He's a young, really young lad. He's not very strong, is he? So their defenders was bullying him. He couldn't. I thought he was poor, to be honest. Sam, I disagree. But it's not his fault, is it? And as I say, they just didn't want to pass to him. They see him in training. They, you know, they know his ability at the moment. And we had nothing up there. It weren't sticking. And that goal, that equaliser just come out of nowhere, because Sarabia, he's got no pace. So when he's on the ball, you want him to be making the right decisions using his his passing ability. But apart from the cross he put in off the free kick, which was a really good delivery, everything else he did was horrendous. Gomez and Lamina were a bit sloppy as well for me. And he was just poor. And I thought Kilman had a bit of a better game than he did against Villa. But it was, if it weren't for Jose Sarr, I agree with Bayliss, especially second half, we would have lost that game, because he pulled off three or four crucial saves. Ait Nouri and, as you mentioned, Lamina should have won it. But as Jack mentioned, really good point. They drew 2-2 with Chelsea with 10 men their last game. Really good result. I mean, I don't think they'd lost in three. So the fact that we battled away and got that draw away at Burnley, yes, they've struggled this season, but I think it's a really good result considering we played quite poorly and considering the situation we're in, and we're playing like this weird 4-4-1-1 with Doherty right midfield. You can't believe it when you say it out loud, but that's the situation we're in, and the character shone through, and we could have nicked it on another day.
And talking about things you can't believe, Bayliss, I think that matches the points total from last season with 8 games to spare, which obviously shows the sort of season we had. And a lot of people are saying that, you know, it's potentially going to peter out and then be a shame. And but obviously back to the goal, I saw a lot of Burnley fans are getting salty, saying that it wasn't a foul in the first place to give the ball away. Company, I think, came out and said that Ait Nouri had tried to pirouette and tripped over himself, and that's why they weren't really very happy with it. I mean, how did you see it?
Theirs came from a soft foul as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Swings and roundabouts. Oh. Those get given against us all the time. All the time you see a player feel a tiny bit of contact, go down, free kick. So it's just one in our favour for a change.
It's weird, wasn't it, Jack? We talk about VAR a lot, but it's one of those instances where we've seen it against us, you know, plenty of times where we've scored a goal, but there's been a foul in the build-up. I suppose it's a little bit of an opposite, really. Do you think it's a foul in the build-up to this? Yes or no, and then scoring from the free kick. It seems just like another highlight of the rules not really working 100% of the time to me.
It's just an example of them they forced it on us. They want to bring it in, but now because of all the negativity, they don't want to bring it in too much. And if you're then reviewing the fouls for the free kick, which led to the goal, it's just going to wind everybody up more and take longer. So they can't touch these sort of things, really. To be honest, I didn't think it was a foul. I think it was soft. I think we were quite lucky to get it. But once you've got it, you've still got to put a good ball in. And, you know, Burnley switched off a little bit, didn't they, really? If they should know that Aitnor is our only goal threat at the moment. They chose not to bother marking him, really. They could have left some of the other ones well alone. So, you know, he took it well, did well to get back into it. But it's a shame that we couldn't nick it. But I think it would have been a bit harsh on Burnley if we did. But that Aitnori chance in the second half, the Aitnori chance.
Because
Harry, Harry had had a bet on Aitnori to score two or more goals. And it was quite tasty odds, wasn't it, Harry? So
80 to 1.
So you cursed him. He was cursed, kiss of death then. But I think he's right to take...
I nearly volleyed the telly off the stand when he missed that.
I think he was right to take the shot on, but if you watch it back, he does do a little glance up to Chiwome and then
he
still takes the shot.
that's prime example.
Like, I see you, mate.
If that was Cunha stood there, he's laying that across. There's no doubt about it.
I agree.
It was literally, it was a carbon copy of the Villa one. He probably had a bit more space and time for the Villa one, but he just hit straight at the keeper's chest.
Yeah.
Anywhere either side, it's a goal.
It was funny. I thought the Wolves fans did very well making the trip. Lots of numbers, very loud, raising the roof, although it looks like they didn't need to because it was falling down in the first half.
Yeah, what was going on with that?
A bunch of fans have got moved because it was at the Jimmy McElroy stand. So supporters were moved from a section of that stand over safety concerns about the stadium's roof. A piece of metal could be seen hanging from the stand's roof above supporters. It's a shit ground, though, isn't it? I mean, let's be honest. I mean, how is... You look at the Premier League grounds and you think, you got Luton. Vitality is okay, but it's tiny. And then you've got places like Turf Moor, and just like it's meant to be the best league in the world. It is literally falling down. I mean, we've got comments in the comment section talking about Molineux being beyond repair. But I mean, Bayliss, at least there's not a piece of metal hanging from the Steve Ball, for example.
For all we know, there might be.
Well, that's true.
isn't it the best, Nick? I've got nothing to say about it. I'll only get myself in trouble.
All right, okay. Let's move on to West Ham. It is, as Jack said before we started recording, the Claret and Blue podcast. So welcome them to Molineux next. Harry, some potentially good news on the horizon. It was that obviously Cunha back in action against Burnley, and there is a 50-50 chance that Hwang and...
Dawson
may be on the bench for West Ham.
Yeah, but he did also add on the end of that, it's more likely they'll be involved with the Forest game. But we need them. We really do, because this is a massive game. What are we, 3 points behind West Ham? Mm-hmm. If we win, we're getting the passports back out again, aren't we? It's every week.
Despite everything we just said, I'm really looking forward to going to Europe next season.
If we've got 4 points in these last two games, I would start to believe, but it's not happening. If we get European football,
we'll be in Europe and we'll have like 7 kids on the bench, won't we? We'll have bloody Roma up front away at bloody Valencia or something. No, but it's a massive game. West Ham are... The thing is, you look at West Ham, you think they're struggling, but then you look at the table... They're still like they're above us, so like you know they're doing something right, and obviously they're still in Europe. Are they still in Europe, or they got knocked out?
They're still in Europe. Yeah.
They are still in Europe.
Yeah, they're still in Europe. So they're doing. Because I know their fans a few months ago they wanted Moyes out, didn't they? They were really unhappy with the way they were playing. They like to sit back and hit us on the counter, so I think that will be their tactics on the day. Obviously, they'll sell out their away end, and I think we've got to try and do a kind of a performance as we did against Fulham, just a battling performance with players playing in out of position. And let's just hope we can get over the line in the day and hope Molineux is up for it.
Jack, West Ham, like as Harry said, very, very strange fan base. It always seems like David Moyes is one game away from the sky falling in, and it's battle stations. He needs to go. They are sitting pretty in seventh, and you, like you say, still in Europe. But I think if we can almost keep it quiet and a little bit dull in the opening stages, so it turns their away fans, because it seems like a pretty easy thing to do.
Yeah, I don't know what to expect, Sam, to be honest, really. I think So the Villa game, I think we all predicted and it went pretty much according to plan, but there was fight in that game and there was a fair amount of fight last night against Burnley as well. So like you just don't know. Like a lot of it comes down to team selection and who's available. If there are players coming back, I know you mentioned Dawson and Twang, then you know that would be brilliant. But again, you can't put too much on players who have just come back to perform. That said, 15 minutes of Cunha last night, we looked a bit better. I think it actually, you could tell, it did help a little bit. So it might be asking too much of you know him to start, but I'd much prefer him for like the first 55 minutes than for you know just the last bit of the second half. But you don't want to rush him back at the same time. But it's another one where you just got to go in there with limited expectations, I think, really. I think because on paper, with the players that are available, and, you know, they're above us in the table. So although it might seem like at the start of the season they're having a terrible season, they're clearly not. But with a bit of success, your levels of expectation change amongst the fan base. Even we know that. We've seen it at our level. So just got to go at it and give it all we've got with all who's available, really. I know it sounds a bit like, you know, a bit of basic commentary, but just, you know, guys are going and got to get beyond the team and just see what happens, because there has been fight lately, but it all just come down to just, you know, who's available on the day and how we set up. So
Dan, do you think it'll be a similar team that started against Villa or one that started against Burnley? Villa was obviously Siren Goal, Santi Bueno, Kilman, Gomez, Semedo, João Gomez, Doyle, Aitnori, Sarabia, Lamina, Chiwomi. And then obviously last night's 11. If you want to refresh of that one. Semedo, Kilman, Gomez, Bueno, as in... the other Bueno, Doherty, Lamina, João Gomez, Aitnori, Sarabia and Chiwomi.
So funnily enough, I did the We Are West Ham podcast this morning as an away view. And he asked this exact question. And I said, I haven't got a clue, mate.
I'm glad they had you on.
It could be anything. I think he said I should take my boots. So pretty much sums it up. The only thing with West Ham in the coming weeks, and this is another thing we discussed, they've got a Thursday, Sunday coming up. They've got a load of fixtures. They've got Leverkusen home and away. So we're the start of a long run for them. So they're going to have to think about squad. They will try and hit us on the break. You said Antonio will be fit and they will have a striker, unlike us. So Wolves going to have possession. We just, as Harry said, it's got to be a Fulham-type performance.
They had a mad game, didn't they? Last game, was it Newcastle? They were 3-1 up and lost 4-3. Was that Saturday?
Yeah, it was the Calvin Phillips gate, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a mad game. So it shows they can concede at least 4 goals.
Well, we can't score, can we? So our goal threat is a bloody fullback.
So true. Harry, let's do a score prediction.
I'm going to be positive 2-1 Wolves.
Jack?
A good effort, but a 2-1 defeat.
You've been I think you've been on the money.
You've been negative lately.
I've been negative because I've got eyes and I can see. Like, I can watch the game. I can see how poor it is. I can see we've got no players. It's just like, it's a recipe for disaster. But I think they're actually doing better than my low expectations given the circumstances. So you should be happy with that.
That's true. Bayless.
I'm going to go with the Desmond.
And I'm also going to go 2-2. And Dan, as your betting news.
Do 1 minute. Sorry, that's really poor form that I didn't have them ready to go. Did a few scorecasts. Odds, there's still a lot of football to be played before we play West Ham, so the odds aren't great at the moment. I imagine they'll probably float around and there'll be some specials out there. Start with a positive. Ryan Aitnori, first goal, obviously. 2-1 Wolves, 60-1, Sam.
Oh, not too bad. Like that.
The Desmond, the 2-2 draw with Chiwomi scoring first, is also 60-1. Bookies haven't really thought about this game yet. Mr. Pessimistic, who also changed his scoreline, thank you. Jared Bowen to score first, 2-0 West Ham, is only 55-1.
Oh, God, man.
And I've done a Harry Mansell bet. Oof. Harry, Semedo first goal, 4-1 Wolves.
Wow, 1,000.
It is 1,000-1.
Is it? Wow. Incredible. Do you know what? It's never going to happen.
It's worth, at the moment, having a few quid on like Aitnori and that, because the bookies are not really realising where he's playing. So they're still having him as like defender odds. That's why he was 80 to 1 to get two goals last night. That's why I put a couple of quid on it. So just a little, yeah.
When I used to work in the bookies for a story of that sort of, you know, similar thing, it was when under McCarthy in the Premier League. And as you do, you talk about the people in the shop and about football. And it was the day that Wolves were playing at Liverpool. And I said to somebody, Stephen Ward's going to play up front tonight, but his price is a defender. If I was going to have a bet, it would be 1-0.
No way.
Stephen Ward. No. I didn't back it. It was. And it was stupid odds because it, like, he was
a defender.
That'd be huge. But he, like, yeah. But
I mean, that'd be massive odds. But I remember, Jack, that was a shock start, wasn't it? He weren't really playing up front at the time. That was kind of like a
no, that's the thing. It was one. Like, because yeah. only with the players available and there was like talk or maybe they'll play Ward up front. I was like, that's the bet I'd have because he was priced at, like, you know, even to score first, like 66 or something.
I should remember this, but did Ward start off as a striker then go left back or was it the other way around? Right.
No, he started as a striker, went to a defender.
Yeah, that was weird, wasn't it? We brought him in as a striker, that was weird.
Was it against someone like Nottingham Forest or something? I think he had to play at left back because somebody like
really good.
Michael Gray or some, it just transpired that, yeah. And to be fair, I forgot he was a striker. Yeah, no, we're going to get caught. No, some good value. There's some value out there if you fancy it.
Do you want some ticket news to cheer you all up?
Oh, we've got some ticket news.
Yeah. Coventry City's Wembley tickets go on general sale tomorrow.
You can fuck off. Kick him out.
Oh. Right, cheers for that, Jack.
Can we finish at that? Can we go now? I don't want to talk about anything else. I'm joking.
Hang on, wait, one more thing. Wolves have entered into an innovative new partnership with Japanese J-League team Shonan Bellmare, strengthening both clubs' exposure overseas and player and coach development. So Link will focus primarily on academy football with players and coaches from both camps sharing experiences of top-level football in different continents and exchanging best practices with each other. Harry, do you think it's another one of those where it's designed to sign some Asian players and hopefully boost some shirt sales, or do you think there's method in the madness?
Probably, yeah. It's probably that, to try and spot a little gem to boost our awareness over there if we sign him. At least, though, when I first saw this, I thought it was something to do with esports again. So, thankfully, it's not. It's probably more of like a grasshopper. But saying that, they don't own them, do they? But so it's probably not like grasshoppers. But yeah, I think it is, mate. It's a little bit of a partnership. Probably swap a few players back and forth for being our youth team. Like, who was that one we signed in January a few years ago? That Kawabi. Chinaman, and we never seen him again. So it'd probably be things like that.
Yeah. Bayliss, do you think it's a good brand message? Is there a reason for it? I just don't really understand the J-League link. I mean, you know, it doesn't seem a place where you're going to be fostering brilliant talent. Although the Japanese national side isn't too shabby, and you've got the guy at Brighton, is it?
Football within a lot of East Asia is getting a lot more popular. Obviously, like Hwang and Son are huge in Korea, and Japan are getting, you know, Matoma and a few more players. So I get why they've done it, but it's a marketing exercise. It's got nothing to do with football.
Yeah, what do you think I mean by best practice from the continent, Jack?
We have to fill that much of the column.
We need 50 words on this thing, and that's what ChatGPT came out.
I don't even know this story. So what is it? They partnered with this Japanese club
from their top
Shonan Bellmare, who lost to Tokyo Verde 2-1 at home at the weekend, apparently.
And they partnered with them like for what? For diet?
The focus primarily on academy football with players and coaches from both camps sharing experiences of top
level. They've got any strikers?
Continents.
Yeah, they've got any good strikers. So yeah, it's probably just going to be a case of, some youth players, they'll probably go over there, swap a few, maybe have a few friendlies against them, that sort of thing. Just building relationships so they can just so that, like you say, if they do get a good player through their academy, we can probably try and swoop it and snap them up. I'd say that's it, really.
Pre-season tour of Japan. I mean, that's always interested me. Good place to go, potentially. Oh, yeah. See what happens to that one. Actually, one more. The Express and Star reported that Wolves are safe despite owners Fosun shedding their business interests. They've actually gone into profit. I'm going to start with Bayliss on this one because he's the money man. They haven't really been doing great in the last, maybe in 5 to 10 years, have they, Bayliss, as a group, as Fosun International, but it seems that their sports arm is being taken a little bit more seriously.
If you'd have sent me the fucking article, I'd have read it.
I just thought you'd pick it up in the FT.
Blindsided. One of their arms, which was their entertainment arm, wasn't doing particularly great, or one was profitable. I haven't read it. I'll do some research over the weekend, and next week I'll try and give some insight into it. To be honest, it's a Chinese mega company. They can either crash wherever they want.
What do you think it's good news or bad news, Jack? Because I mean, there's a lot of comments saying that, you know, there's going to be no investment in the summer. They're probably going to want to sell. Does this sort of story, when an investment firm, which is obviously what they were, and a huge, globally attractive one, obviously based in China, so a little bit different when it comes to the rules and where the money is potentially going or where it comes from.
Yeah, there aren't any.
yeah, they're very true. Do you think that it's a positive news story, or do you think it's that little bit of light that is towards the end of the tunnel, which means what will be sold?
I mean, it's positive in terms of you obviously want your owners to be making money, but, you know, there's so many different fingers in so many different pies that Fosun have got, that it doesn't mean that money is going to trickle down to us at all. And we know they're careful with their money. They don't invest in stuff that they seem to be unprofitable. And we're probably an exception to that rule, actually, because we've obviously not been profitable at all lately. So, I wouldn't mean that it means that we're going to see any movement anywhere, to be honest with you. We'll probably still be skimping around to try and find £3 million to sign, Kevin Kyle in January.
They could have just deleveraged one arm of something and then that boosted their profits. No idea, unless you get into like the granularity of it. It could just be something to give a headline.
What do you reckon, Harry?
I don't know, but they always say, every time you listen to them talk, they always say they're never going to sell us, don't they? They say that it's like a lifetime plan. But with the way they're dealing with things from the outside looking in, it doesn't seem that way, does it? But I think you're right. I think they're just a business. Yeah, probably ain't got. I mean, they have got emotion in the club, but they just look at the books, don't they? They don't care what most of the fans are saying. If they go with emotion, we'll be bust in 10 years. If you got a random Wolves fan out of South Bank and said, "Right, run the club," you'd spunk 100 million in about three windows, and then we'd be like, what's it called? He went bust that team up in Manchester, Bury. We'd be like Bury.
Bury. We could have the glory days of Bury.
Yeah. Definitely. And on that note, I think it's time to end. So we'll say goodbye to Harry Mansell.
Goodbye.
Dan Bayliss.
Goodbye.
And Jack Williams.
Bye.
And it is a goodbye from me. Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.